On the eighth day, Moses called Aaron and his sons and the elders of Israel. And he said to Aaron, take for yourself a bull calf for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering, both without blemish, and offer them before the Lord. And say to the people of Israel, take a male goat for a sin offering and a calf and a lamb, both a year old, without blemish, for a burnt offering, and an ox and a ram for peace offerings to sacrifice before the Lord, and a grain offering mixed with oil, for today the Lord will appear to you. And they brought what Moses commanded in front of the tent of meeting, and all the congregation drew near and stood before the Lord. And Moses said, this is the thing that the Lord commanded you to do, that the glory of the Lord may appear to you. Then Moses said to Aaron, draw near to the altar and offer your sin offering and your burnt offering, and make atonement for yourself and for the people, and bring the offering of the people, and make atonement for them, as the Lord has commanded. So Aaron drew near to the altar and killed the calf of the sin offering, which was for himself. And the sons of Aaron presented the blood to him, and he dipped his finger in the blood and put it on the horns of the altar and poured out the blood at the base of the altar. But the fat and the kidneys and the long lobe of the liver from the sin offering he burned on the altar, as the Lord commanded Moses. The flesh and the skin he burned up with fire outside the camp. Then he killed the burnt offering, and Aaron's sons handed him the blood, and he threw it against the sides of the altar. And they handed the burnt offering to him piece by piece, and the head, and he burned them on the altar. And he washed the entrails and the legs and burned them with the burnt offering on the altar. Then he presented the people's offering and took the goat of the sin offering that was for the people and killed it and offered it as a sin offering like the first one. And he presented the burnt offering and offered it according to the rule. And he presented the grain offering, took a handful of it and burned it on the altar besides the burnt offering of the morning. Then he killed the ox and the ram, the sacrifice of peace offerings for the people. And Aaron's sons handed him the blood, and he threw it against the sides of the altar. But the fat pieces of the ox and of the ram, the fat tail and that which covers the entrails and the kidneys and the long lobe of the liver, they put the fat pieces on the breasts, and he burned the fat pieces on the altar. But the breasts and the right thigh Aaron waved for a wave offering before the Lord, as Moses commanded. Then Aaron lifted up his hands towards the people and blessed them. And he came down from offering the sin offering and the burnt offering and the peace offerings. And Moses and Aaron went into the tent of meeting. And when they came out, they blessed the people, and the glory of the Lord appeared to all the people. And fire came out from before the Lord and consumed the burnt offering and the pieces of fat on the altar. And when all the people saw it, they shouted and fell on their faces. Now Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, each took his censer and put fire in it and laid incense on it and offered unauthorized fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them. And fire came out from before the Lord and consumed them, and they died before the Lord. Then Moses said to Aaron, this is what the Lord has said. Among those who are near me, I will be sanctified, and before all the people, I will be glorified. And Aaron held his peace. Phil.
Great. Thanks very much, Mark, indeed. Keep that passage open in front of you. We're going to be looking at that. So I've put on your outline, it should be an outline that's helpful, the subject that we're looking at today, which is God's loving provision of a way back for sinners. So we're going to see today, what we're looking at is the first glimpse of God's loving provision of a way back for sinners, a way back to him. And the passage we're looking at is Leviticus chapters 8 to 10. It's quite ambitious this lunchtime, so we're just going to be trying to cover this whole section. I think this is probably one of the, if not the most significant moment in the first five books of the Bible, because it's the high point since Genesis 3 and the fall of man under the curse of God. So this is hugely significant, okay? Leviticus chapter 9 is like a peak. It's a high point in the story, in the Bible story so far, ever since everything went wrong in Genesis 3. You could say it's like the Mission Impossible moment of realization. So in every Mission Impossible film, which you may have seen, there is a moment where someone, let's be honest, it's Tom Cruise, someone works out that what seems impossible, the entrance into this ridiculously fortified facility, what seems impossible is not quite impossible. There is a way. If we go in at this time, we'll have 12 seconds while the alarms are down, and as long as Tom Cruise can skydive from a helicopter, grab the ledge with his fingertips and backflip his way into an air vent, it's possible to get in. Now that's a terrible illustration of what we're looking at here, because whether or not Tom Cruise can get into a fictional compound is in the end completely meaningless. But whether or not sinful humanity, estranged from God and from the life that we were made for, can come back into relationship with him forever? Well, the answer to that question is potentially life-changing for every single person who's ever lived. It has been for me and every Christian in this room. What we're about to look at is the first real glimpse in the Bible that there is a way back for sinners. This is a hugely significant moment in the Bible. It is, as it were, the Mission Impossible moment where the impossible is discovered to be possible because of God's loving provision of a way. So, 2 points today. There is a way back for sinners. There is no other way. And then a conclusion. That's where we're going. Firstly, there is a way back for sinners, and that's chapters 8 and 9. Chapters 8 and 9. Don't worry, we're not going to sort of walk laboriously through all of the detail. But as a whole, the picture is very, very clear. Chapters 8 and 9. We see the way and the goal. Okay, so the way is chapters 8 and most of chapter 9. And the goal is the climax, which you find the last three verses of chapter 9. That's the goal. Okay, we'll look at those two things in turn. The way is very simple. The way is very simple, and that is this. The way back to God is through the blood of a perfect substitute. And we were seeing, actually this is a continuation of last week. Go on the website, listen to where we were last week. We were thinking about the first seven chapters of Leviticus, where the way was explained in the first seven chapters. And now in 8 and 9, the way is proven. Explained, proven. It's really the same point. Chapters 8 and 9, just putting into practice what we saw last week, through the blood of a perfect substitute. There are three offerings that enable the big moment of God's glory coming. Just come to chapter 9, verse 22. Let me show you this. So it's really these three offerings for the people that enable this. So Aaron lifts up his hands towards heaven and blesses the people. And he comes down from offering the sin offering, the burnt offering, and the peace offerings. Okay, these are the offerings made for the people. And so just flick back to 9 verse 3. You'll see them there as Aaron is making preparation. So 9 verse 3, you've got, you need for the people of Israel to bring a sin offering, and then a burnt offering, and then verse 4, peace offerings. Okay, those are the three offerings. And then if you look down at 9 verse 15, sorry, I know we're going fast, but 9 verse 15 and 16 and 17 and 18, that's where these offerings actually get offered. So verse 15, the people's offering for a sin offering. Verse 15 is the sin offering. Verse 16, he presents the burnt offering for the people. And then verse 18, the peace offerings. Everything in these two chapters is building up to those offerings for the people. And that is, once those offerings have been made, that is the moment where we can reach the climax of chapter 9. That's really important. The blood of a substitute, therefore. The blood of a substitute. And as we saw last week, it is the blood of a perfect substitute that achieves access, the burnt offering, forgiveness, the sin offering, and peace with God. Full reconciliation with God. But as you see, there is a massive build-up in chapter 8. Now, chapter 8 is just all about build-up. These offerings for the people can only be offered if God's tabernacle is holy enough, if the altar is holy enough, and if the priests are holy enough. It's all build-up. So if God's tabernacle is holy enough, so chapter 8, the whole tent has to be consecrated with oil. That's 10 to 13 in chapter 8. We won't read it now. But then the altar, if the altar is holy enough, chapter 8, verse 14 to 17, a bull has to be sacrificed, a sin offering, not for the priests or for the people, but for the altar, just to make sure that the altar has been cleansed. And that has to happen 7 times, 7 days, one day after the other. And then if the priests are holy enough, and that's the second half of chapter 8, the priests need to be atoned for through the blood of a ram on their earlobe and their toe to represent they're completely covered in blood. Then the blood has to be thrown on the altar and then got back off the altar and put on the priest's clothes again so that they are completely atoned for. And that's the subject of the whole of chapter 8. But the whole of chapter 8 is just to make these offerings possible in chapter 9. So that these offerings for the people can actually be made without contamination. And through it we get, don't we, a sense of the sheer, unapproachable holiness of God. And then in chapter 9, you'll see chapter 9, verse 1, the eighth day. This is the big day. Again, the high priest has to offer a bull and ram for his own sin before finally he's able to do the job, what it's all been for, and that is to make atonement for the people through the blood of a substitute. 5 substitutes, actually. Sin offering, guilt offering, burnt offering, and then peace offerings. And so we see the way back to God could not be making it clearer at this point. The way back to God is through the blood of a perfect substitute. I don't know if you do Google Maps. Most ways have a shape, and you know, when you sort of do the Google Maps, imagine you're doing that back home and you sort of zoom out and the way home will have some kind of a shape, whether it's a fork or something like that. Well, here we have the shape of the way back to God. The shape of the way back to God is a perfect substitute who can die in the place of the people. Well, so firstly, the way builds up to the climax in verses 22 to 24, which is the goal. So just look with me at the goal of this, of the sacrificial system. Then Aaron lifted up his hands, this is verse 22, lifted up his hands towards the people and blessed them. And he came down from offering the sin offering, the burnt offerings and the peace offerings. And Moses and Aaron went into the tent of meeting, and when they came out, they blessed the people. And the glory of the Lord appeared to all the people. And fire came out from before the Lord and consumed the burnt offering and the pieces of fat on the altar. And when the people saw it, they shouted and fell on their faces. The goal of the whole sacrificial system, all the blood that's been shed, is that the people can live with God in his presence, under his blessing, able to see his glory. So those 3 things, they're in his presence, they're gathered around him. They're under his blessing. You see that twice the people are declared to be under the blessing of God. Aaron blesses them in verse 22, and then Moses and Aaron bless them in verse 23. Here then are sinners brought into the presence of God, no longer under his curse, but under his blessing. You see that since Genesis 3, the whole world under the curse of God, death, suffering, sin, the frustrations of work, as you guys are all too familiar with. The curse that hangs over this world. Can you begin to see the significance of this moment as sinners are brought out from underneath the curse and now are placed, find themselves under the blessing of God? But not only that, and it seems actually that this is the emphasis, that God not only wants them to be in his presence, he not only wants them to be under his blessing, but he wants them to see his glory. You see that? Verse 23, the glory of the Lord appeared to all the people. In fact, I think it is the sight of his glory that seems to be the climax of this whole thing. Okay, so just come back to 9 verse 4. I think we see this here. The Lord says, you know, at the end of this day, after all these offerings, today the Lord will appear to you. And then 9 verse 6. This thing the Lord has commanded you to do, that the glory of the Lord may appear to you. This is the goal. That the people of God might dwell in the presence of God, under the blessing of God, but in order to behold, to look upon, to gaze upon the glory of God. Now just try to imagine this, what this would have been looked like, or what this would have been like for the people, this moment. You'd been there. It seems that fire probably came out from the tabernacle, from before the Lord's. The altar was outside the main tent, so fire came out from the tabernacle, and all the people see it. And as they see it, they glimpse the glory of the Lord. And there is something about this fire that was so enthralling, so awesome, so beautiful, that they shouted, probably in awe, just an involuntary shout. They can't help it. And then they fall on their faces. What do you think it would have been like? What kind of fire? This always happens in the Bible, by the way. Whenever people are faced with a glimpse of the glory of God, flat on their faces. I think of the elders in Revelation, falling on their faces before the Lord, throwing down their crowns. Let's be clear, by the way, this is only a glimpse of the glory of God. You know, this is as if the king in his robes might show the briefest flash of the hem of his robe. That's what's happening here. They're not seeing the face of God. No one can see the face of God. God has already said it. No one can see my face and live in Exodus. Moses has seen his back. Here the people see it, the briefest glimpse, just the very outskirts of the glory of God. And it's all they can take. Such is the fierce beauty of his glory. But the point is, they can glimpse his glory and not die. They're in his presence, able to behold his glory. And so here we have the high point of the Bible story so far, because here for the first time since Genesis 3, you have a group of human beings back in the presence of God, under the blessing of God, beholding the glory of God. And therefore, it is just as if they were back in Eden before everything went wrong, as they used to be able to walk in the garden with God. The point is, the point that's being made through these two chapters is that there is a way back for sinners into the relationship we were made for. And that way is in the shape of a substitute who dies for our sin. This is the Mission Impossible moment, where what seems impossible, what should be impossible, is shown to be possible by the provision of God. It's not the final answer, as we said last week. In the end, the blood of animals cannot do it. There will need to be better blood that actually pays the infinite price of our sin. It's not the final answer, but it is the principle. There is a way back for sinners. And God in his love will provide it. And so what we have here, guys, is an early glimpse of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The first glimpse of the way back for sinners. When Jesus came, he said this. He said, "Come to me, all who are weary, and I will give you rest." By which he means, I will bring you back to God to be able to enjoy his blessing forever, in his presence forever, beholding his glory forever. How? Well, I will do it as I lay down my life for you as your perfect substitute on the cross. There is a way for sinners to come back to God. Wonderful news for us, every single one of us here, and for the city. And it is ultimately the only news that matters. There's plenty of news in our newspapers at the moment, isn't there? News for today, forgotten tomorrow. This is the news that matters. There is a way back to God for sinners. So firstly, there is a way. Secondly, there is no other way. Chapters 8 and 9 work with chapter 10. It's one big section. Chapters 8 and 9 show us the way. Chapter 10, straight away, the loving warning of God. There is no other way. And just have a look down straight away to see what we get with Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron. They each take a censer and put fire in it and laid it incense on it and offered unauthorized fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them. And fire came out from before the Lord and consumed them, and they died before the Lord. Shocking, isn't it? You think maybe they'd get a rap on the knuckles and told not to do it again? Immediately consumed, and they have to be carried out in coats by their brothers. The question is, what did Nadab and Abihu do wrong? And I think the answer is that they approached God in the wrong way. Well, let's think about this. What did they actually do? They take incense in a censer. So I think a censer is just one of these, you know, metal carriers of fire. And they take that and they offer the fire before the Lord, but offer fire that the Lord hasn't actually asked for. They either would have done this, there were two altars, okay, so they either would have done it on the bronze altar outside the holy place, which was never supposed to happen, God never said do that. Or probably worse, they actually went into the holy place, I think this is more likely, to where the altar of incense was, where Aaron the high priest was supposed to offer incense every morning, not anyone else. And they did it. Either way, they did something on God's altar that God had said they could not do, or that God had not said that they could do. And the shock of this, actually, is this, isn't it? It's not that they were doing something obviously morally wrong. They weren't killing someone or stealing someone's horse. They were approaching God in the wrong way. And the point is, there is no other way. So this contrasts with chapters 8 and 9. I'd show you this if we had time, but you see again and again, they do as the Lord commanded Moses, as the Lord commanded Moses, as the Lord commanded Moses throughout chapters 8 and 9, and then the glorious moment. And then Nadab and Abihu, the contrast, which he had not commanded them. The point is very simple. There is a way, God's way. There is no other way. And I don't think there's any reason to think they didn't mean well. So let's think about this for a second. they surely would have been aware that what they were doing God hadn't asked for, but I don't think they would have done it if they didn't at least on one level think they were doing a good thing. They were trying to worship God by doing this. I think a helpful way to think about what is what their problem wasn't. I don't think their problem was a lack of zeal. It certainly wasn't a lack of belief in God, and it probably wasn't a lack of desire to please God. So what was it? What was their problem? It was this. It was a foolish spiritual complacency. A foolish spiritual complacency of deciding that they could make their own way to approach God, to worship Him. The root issue is that they had no idea how holy God is, and no idea how serious it was to approach Him in any other way than the way that He has provided. And as I speak, I hope you're beginning to realize how relevant this is to all of us and to us today. Just think about this for a second. We love to think that we can approach God on our own terms, in our own way. Think of the air we breathe in our culture among colleagues and around in the city. We love to think that there can be many ways up the same mountain to God, that all religions lead to Him. We find the idea very troubling that there could be only one way, God's way, and that all other ways are hopeless. And just think for a moment what Nadab and Abihu actually did. They hardly deviated from God's clearly commanded way. In the context, maybe a 1% deviation. Don't get me wrong, they deviated, but think about it. The right tabernacle, the right God, almost the right people, they were priests, a legitimate offering, yes, a legitimate offering, but by the wrong people. They didn't deviate much. And so, therefore, where does that leave the religions that we completely make up as ways to God? Martin Bashir, an interviewer, once was interviewing the well-known Christian American pastor, Tim Keller, who's actually just passed away. And the subject that he was interviewing about was whether there's only one way to God. And he put the question in very stark terms. He said this, he said, "There are millions of Muslims, Hindus, Sikhs who are dedicated to their faith and very serious about it. Are you actually saying that they don't really know God? And Tim said, basically, "Yes, I am saying that." It is a common question that people have about Christianity. And Nadab and Abihu show us that there can be no deviation at all from God's way. There is no other way. And they also show us, I think, that the issue is not sincerity. So it's not to do with how sincere we are. So to put it like this, there's not some kind of scale of sincerity which, if you reach a certain level on that, God is able to say, "It's great that you're sincere enough, and now you can come into my holy presence and live with me forever." No, and the reason is this, because the gulf between a holy God and a sinful people is unbridgeable for us. So to put it like this, to illustrate it, doesn't matter how sincerely I try to swim across the Pacific from California to Australia, I'm never going to do it. There is only one way back to Him, which is through the blood of Jesus Christ. And that is why Jesus says, "I am the only way." There can be only one way. And so the lesson of Nadab and Abihu is this. It is no good trying to make up our own ideas of how to approach God or how to worship Him. When we create our own religions, we bring our senses to the altar. When we try to improve on the Christian faith by adding to the simple finished work of Christ received by faith, we bring our senses to the altar. And just look again at how serious this is. Verse 3, Moses said to Aaron, "This is what the Lord has said, among those who are near me, I will be sanctified, and before all the people I will be glorified. In other words, God says here, I will not and cannot be approached except through the way that I have ordained. There is no other way. Among